everyone, and welcome back to There Are Four Hosts. As always, there are four hosts. I'm Sabrina. You can find me at Voidcat Gaming on Instagram, Twitter, or Twitch.
And I'm Michael. You can find me at Four Hosts on Twitter.
Hey everyone, this is Jonathan. You can find me at Just Average J pretty much everywhere on the internet.
Hi, I'm Keith Justice. You can find me on Instagram because I found out that my Twitter is no longer connected to my Facebook, so my Twitter's a lot more boring. So if you go to Instagram and look for Keith Justice, you'll see some fun pictures about Stargate.
There you go.
Just so many Stargate
pictures. Yep. And whatever else I'm
An
watching.
An absurd amount. And whatever else Keith streets. Is watching. If you ever want to do a watch along with Keith, just like go hang out his Facebook or his Instagram. Like,
yeah,
he's basically a watch along.
Keith nice. Commentary.
Keith commentary. Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm sure y'all put this together since two episodes ago we did a motion picture.
Mm-hmm.
One episode ago we did Wrath of Khan, but this episode
Undiscovered Country.
Search
no, I'm
for
kidding.
Spock. Oh
my god, Search for Spock.
Yes.
Personally, I like this movie a lot more than I recall liking it.
Same.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 People say the odd ones suck.
Yeah, that's what I'd seen it way back in the day, and then I was like, oh, the odd ones suck, so I'm never going to go back to it again. And I've watched this one twice in the past few months, and I really like it. It's a really good movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's one of the exceptions.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
You know, possibly and probably because it's so intrinsically tied with Wrath of Khan and, maybe I should talk about this later.
I can see not revisiting it, though.
But now that I have, I'm like, I like this one.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay, do you feel that way also?
Well, I definitely like it. It's a great
You're like,
movie.
I always liked it.
I did. I'm not going to lie. I thought it was cool. I mean, obviously, it's like any of the movies. There are things that don't make sense, but whatever.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, how the hell did Doc Brown get still, there? I don't know.
Yeah, I know, right? Where's the time machine?
Time travel. Come on. Time travel. Yeah.
Where's the DeLorean? Come on. And why does he look weird?
Just kidding. They do steal his vehicle, then travel through time.
Yeah, I know.
Yes.
It's so funny. But yeah, I love it. It's a great movie.
Doc Brown also got very good at Klingon. Like, I'm mm-hmm. impressed.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
I actually felt he wasn't. I'm cool because it's him, but when he started talking, I'm like, you talk like a human, not like a Klingon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But he's got that accent, you know, he can't help it.
No.
He is from 20th century America.
Yeah, if he's being Doc Brownish, I'm not going to say stop.
Right.
But yeah, I can see why I don't revisit this one. There's something missing in it that I like in my Star Treks. Like, I think
really?
It's...
Do you know what it is, or it's just like a
not enough.
Nebulous?
I think in my Star Treks, I like the final Starship shootout, which I don't feel like I got. Mm. I got Kirk, you know, fisticuffs, and it's kind of like, okay.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Well, don't you worry. It's true that there was not a shootout, but we will definitely talk about the three ship designs that pop up.
Woo. There's one shootout, and there was a good scene with that. I can wait.
I guess just one ship design, because the other two are...
No, one ship shootout.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's not much of a shootout, is it?
They do a thing with ships where they have cowboys drawing. Like, it's a quick draw thing where, like,
you see
distortion. Yeah, I see it. Get your guns ready, Sulu, because we're the Enterprise crew and we don't mess around. And then they're like, the Klingons think they got them and they come out of, like, you know, cloak and fire. And like, who gets to shoot off first was pretty cool. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. So general impressions favorable then.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes. Nimoy's first directed Star Trek film.
Wasn't he planning on leaving after this or something like that? And then this
not
movie?
After this one, after Wrath of Khan.
Okay.
And that's why he almost didn't get direct. So like during Wrath of Khan,
and that's why they killed him in Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, he had a horrible time doing the motion picture and wanted to never do it again. And they wanted to be killed off. Then in Wrath of Khan, he had a great time. He's like, oh my god, wait, don't kill Spock.
Can I direct, take it back?
Yeah, can I direct the next movie?
And then he got his own movie. And then you got a movie. Well,
didn't you say you didn't like Star Trek because you wanted to die? So I'm not sure if it was like you direct this. And then he's like, no, I'm cool again. And
I take it back.
Yep.
I always find it interesting to keep an eye out for Leonard Nimoy's shifting relationship with Shatner as they made the movies. Hmm. And as Nimoy like came to accept Spock and then reject Spock and then accept Spock again, because I'm sure it was in that period of time that he wrote the first biography, I Am Not Spock.
Yeah. Right?
And then years and years later, wrote I Am Spock.
I like so that he did that.
Yeah. His relationship with Star Trek being up and down, yeah, that'll happen. And then, of course, DeForest Kelly on his deathbed was like, let's make one more of those Star Trek movies. Those were fun. DeForest Kelly, I miss you.
I know.
DeForest Kelly is a true treasure in this one also.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, my God. He's amazing. Okay.
I love
just like yeah. nothing.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's nothing specific I want to talk about because I just want to talk about the whole movie. It's so great. Okay.
Agreed. Let's do it.
Sure. I got my notes.
There's one thing that makes me sad, though. Rand shows up for like a second. You just see her as a cameo. She doesn't even say a line and then you never see her again. Mm-hmm. But her cameo is still really funny because it's like they're stealing the Enterprise. The ship comes out. No, it's not when they're stealing it. When they're bringing the Enterprise back, it's all like scratched up from the end of Wrath of Khan. And she just like, everybody's looking at it like, oh, the Enterprise is here. And she just shakes her fucking head. You guys, you did it again.
Yeah. She's McGonagall. Why is it always you three?
Damn kids.
Right.
Like my first note is a nitpick, which, you know, I'm not going hard on, but I'm just kind of like wondering.
Oh, yeah, please.
Yeah, when it comes to Star Trek, or maybe if there's an actual answer, what's the procedure about like when people die? Like, why aren't we taking their bodies back to their like homes and their families and burying them? That always like made me really confused at the end of Wrath of Khan and started this where they're like, oh man, he's dead. Let's shoot him out of a torpedo tube. I'm like, what? Wait, why? What? Why would you guys do that?
I feel like this is related to maritime burial.
Yeah,
a lot of Star Trek, especially early on, was based on submarine warfare. Obviously it's all of the Navy's like ranking systems and stuff, so let me look that up, but I'm pretty sure it's because that's what they do.
Yeah. When they were on the open sea and stuff.
All right, I could see that. Yeah, but like I can understand Sarek when he's like, why did you freaking shoot my son's body on
planet? No, that's, why didn't you that's bring a good him
point
home? Yeah,
and it's like, yeah guys, why didn't you bring the body home? But like I get the there's like layers of stuff happening where they wanted to be beautifully symbolic and not too sad about like Spock dying and shooting him like a shooting star on a planet is beautiful. And I guess there's the Navy traditions and not just Keith getting his, you know, realistic speech and stuff.
When they had to make us cry too when Kirk gave that speech at the end.
Yeah, okay.
Although I find it really funny that that speech, Kirk, his soul, of all the souls I had met, his was the most human. Like, wouldn't Spock take it as an insult?
Yo,
though?
Oh, absolutely. Like, hey.
Yeah, but absolutely. Kirk didn't mean it that way. So, yeah.
I know.
Every time I hear that, like, I side-eye. I'm like, I don't know if that's cool to say that, but I get the
Jim,
sentiment.
Jim, he was your bestie. Like, you can't say that. Hey.
I love that McCoy was like, of all people to take the like essence of Spock, McCoy.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, it, like as much banter as there was between those two, and then to have him like carrying it, just
for all those arguments irony, I lost.
Yeah,
lost.
Yeah, the irony. I just loved it.
Okay, let me point out though, real quick, that we are constantly bantering and like being jerks to each other, and that's what Spock and McCoy's relationship is. They're very close friends. I don't know what you mean. Yeah. They're almost besties.
Yeah,
Kirk's just in the middle.
Yeah.
Another nitpick then, if they're besties, and so sorry, Wrath of Spock, for dogging on you too much. but it's just kind of like, I'm a little frustrated with
they're
like,
frenemies.
Spock. Yeah, Spock wouldn't do like. I'm nitpicking. Spock wouldn't do this then. Because, like, he's putting his friend's life at risk by putting his soul in him like that and not telling him. And Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't see Spock being selfish like that, going, oh my God, mm-hmm. I hope I don't die. I better put my life in somebody else.
Yeah.
Like, Spock would go down and, like, not worry about dying. Yeah. But I understand he wanted to come back for the sequel.
I agree with you. That's definitely a thing that was written, like, afterwards. They're like, and then Spock panicked and put his in McCoy. Yeah, McCoy. Because he was the only person that was there. Yep. But I feel like Wrath of Khan might have been the first movie that did it. But this movie, like, I was talking before, not today, but I was talking before about how, like, TNG and Voyager, etc., those were ensemble casts. But TOS wasn't really an ensemble show. It was, like, the Kirk and Spock and Bones show with other people who were, you know, kind of there. Mm-hmm. Search for Spock is one of those first movies where it was like it really became the Star Trek ensemble. Like,
yeah.
There's a scene just for something Uhura does. There's one that's just Sulu. Mm-hmm. Don't call me Tiny. I don't remember if Chekhov gets one, but there's definitely like a bunch of Scotty ones. Scotty, have you always multiplied your estimates by factor 4? Of course, sir. How else can I keep my reputation as a miracle worker?
That's one of the notes I wrote down. Yeah, I love that part.
Scotty called out. That's my first note.
Beautifully meta geek commentary. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it too because it's also referenced in Voyager towards the beginning. Like in one of the first episodes, Catherine Janeway, B'Elanna gives Catherine Janeway an estimate and she's like, can you do it faster? And she's like, no. I know some people do that where they give you a fake estimate to seem like a miracle worker, but when I tell you it takes 5 hours, it's going to take 5 hours.
Well, and they talk about it in TNG too.
They do, yeah.
The episode Relics.
Did Scotty give Geordi that advice?
Yeah.
He did, yeah.
He's like, how long is it like, really going to take you? Yeah.
That has always been a Star Trek trope that's, like, bothered me. If the joke that doesn't exist, I was thinking, like, to recalibrate the systems to shoot through space and time, that'll take 3-4 months. You've got 2 hours. And, like, they do it anyway. I'm like, hey, no. No.
Hey.
If you can do that, no. No, you can't really do it. Okay, I'll let it go. Gotta let it go of a lot, but.
I like that Star Trek made it a joke specifically about Scotty rather than it being, like, just meta, like, somehow they magically did it in time. Truly. Well, if we want to just go through notes, let's go through notes. Jay, what's your first note?
I didn't take notes because you know me. I never take notes.
Okay, perfect. No problem.
I just go with the flow, yo.
Yeah. Michael?
My first one was directed by Nimoy, but which we already kind of went over. I love the opening dialogue that Kirk did, like, on his log. I thought it was really, really well written. And so then I looked to see who wrote it, and of course it was Roddenberry, and I can't remember the other guy's name, but I just like that. He was talking about, you know, the Enterprise was like a house with all the children gone and stuff.
Oh,
it was very cool.
I love that line.
That was my first note after director.
Yep, that's my third. Like my third note says, a house with all the children gone.
Right, I love that.
Especially since this is the movie his son, mm-hmm. and also that makes it clear that, like, the Enterprise crew's a family. Okay, this is later. Never mind. Okay, this doesn't matter. What's your next note, Keith?
They're decommissioning the Enterprise?
It's only 20 years old. Pardon?
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Since my soul really connects with Star Trek at the movies, like, the ship seems like it's like you've been in action. Oh, it had the refit for like 4 years, right? They mm-hmm. refit it. They gave it like the top of the line of like whatever, and like they're already treating it like it's old. I'm like, no, you just got it. And
why? Yeah, like battleships we keep for like 50 years. Yeah. 20 years? Come on, man.
And mm-hmm. then also, like, you know, you guys don't know this in the future, but in TNG, we're still seeing some of your era ships in action. Right. So, if any, like, they just seem really, like, dismissive of the Enterprise that has saved the freaking universe. Actually, I'm not sure.
Oh, for sure.
Did they do universe-saving stuff in the TV series? Or galaxy-saving stuff? Or
if they do save the universe, it does happen a couple of times where, like, something happens that, like, would have a greater effect. But when that does happen, it's not really the Enterprise saving the world. It's kind of like a multi-dimensional being steps in and is like, grow up, children!
Well, yeah, a ship like that, you know, you don't just like, they're like, whatever, get rid of this thing. We got another ship. I'm just like, guys, treat it special. Yeah. That's a
truly,
that's an important spaceship. You can't just like toss it away. So like, yeah, like every time we keep seeing it, it's being decommissioned or not working right or something. So.
Yeah, and I do blame this movie for the J.J. Abrams movie's propensity to break Enterprise in every single movie. Yeah. I think it's because of Search for Spock. Every freaking movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the blowing up of the jump, like we're just jumping all over the place, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, as always.
My God. Fuck, okay, I'm so mad. They blew up Enterprise. Like I said, I think there's another note where I say, like, there's, like, a era of movies and of my growing up where I was just kind of pissed off that, like, why do they try to piss me off every movie? Like, why do we have to have... But, like, now I understand it's a rule of life and stories that if you have a victory, you do need to have a sacrifice.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, just leave the ship alone. Don't kill his son. Just win. Can I not have that?
You can, but then would you be satisfied with the ending?
Kid Keith would have been.
I mean, seriously, honestly, I get really tired of that, like, formulaic, every single action movie has a moment where it seems like all of the heroes are going to lose, and then the ally that we thought was dead appears out of nowhere, and all of a sudden we win! Yay! I can't feel tension if you do it every single movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the greatest movie of all time to do it was the first Star Wars movie, which... I have to admit, like, when it came to playing with our toys as kids, we would do that kind of scene every play session. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that infected a lot of minds.
Absolutely.
The first Star Wars movie?
Yeah, where Han comes in at the end, right?
A New Hope?
Yeah, obviously I know.
And Han Solo swoops in for the save, just as, like, Darth Vader gets a lock on Luke Skywalker. Freaking dude, I still explode with joy every time this thing happens.
Every time Han Solo comes out of nowhere and he's like, JK, I decided I like you guys after all.
Yeah, yep, I was a little kid and like we were all in the living room and like I was on 22nd Street. I was like, I could have been older than four. And like that scene happens, we're watching it on television, like when Han goes, yahoo! And like I like my face, I remember glowed. I started looking around the room for everybody else and everybody else is just kind of sitting watching it. I'm like, well,
what?
Yeah,
this is the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was just like, "What? Why isn't everybody else feeling this? Am I wrong?" So yeah, but they didn't do this this time, did they?
Yeah, like, actually, when you said that, I was like, "What sacrifice is he talking about?" So that's what I was focused on.
Oh,
you
said last minute save though.
But yeah. I see where you came from. Yep.
Yeah, the sacrifice is his son and the ship.
Yeah.
Search for Spock. Yeah, but in A New Hope.
Oh, and in A New Hope, the sacrifice they lost was Obi-Wan, but I was okay with that one, I guess. And
aha, Obi-Wan.
The final save was
Yeah, that follows.
Yeah, actually, I was actually thinking, I thought about that exactly this week, because I was thinking about three-act structures and stuff, and I was like, wait, did A New Hope do that? And
it sure did.
Yeah. The loss was Obi-Wan.
I mean, like, A New Hope is a pretty basic storytelling structure.
Yeah. But Empire Strikes Back isn't. Well,
and that's why Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I was thinking about 3X structures. I was like, wait, they don't have that middle moment where everything is lost. And they also don't have the big victory at the end either.
They kind of have the moment where everybody is lost when Han and Leia get like kidnapped by Darth Vader, and then Luke has to decide whether to leave Yoda and his training to go save them or not. But it's definitely a different feel than the way that scene usually comes in most movies. Yeah. Empire Strikes Back. Nice.
So, yeah. Talk
about Star Trek, though, right?
And then in this one, let's see. What's the middle? Oh, yeah. The middle one is fucking son getting killed. That hurt me as a kid.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I was hurt.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It actually hurt me as an adult watching that scene just now, because it was so clearly like, well, we need Savik for plot, and obviously we can't kill Spock, so... Oh, David's dead. Sorry, Kirk.
Yeah. I know. Sorry, Kirk. And they had just become cool. Like, they had just, like, hugged and become like, hey, you're my son, and all that
stuff. That's why they did it.
And then, oh, dude,
Father-son moments are always stick hard on me in any kind of entertainment. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know, like I kind of felt like
that's your weakness. I see. Yep. I will remember this.
My kryptonite, my weak point, my flashing dot that you have to take down my
throw opponent. Me on that's mine too. Me too. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you what mine is. If you figure it out, you can abuse it, but I'm not giving you a free pass.
Aw, great.
Okay. Yeah, I think I was watching it with my dad and stuff, so like it's kind of like, yeah, father son's on screen. Oh my god! Yeah. Fucking stabbed him like it was nothing. Mm-hmm. And it was sudden, and like you see Kirk destroyed. I'm just like, wait, we just got the son character.
Although, yeah, that's the thing that I always find interesting, that like how shaken Kirk is by finding out his son died. Mm-hmm. But like they didn't really know each other.
Yeah. Have you guys seen For the Love of Spock, that documentary?
No.
If Jay and Keith, I mean, it's, I have the father thing too. Yeah. I went with a friend of mine to see it, and I in the theater, and I was just sobbing uncontrollably. Uh-huh. And I just, it was like, I couldn't hold back. But it's an excellent film, but I, just with the father thing, I'd bring a box of tissues.
Okay. Good to know.
Sold.
Is like, it's from the point of view of Mark Leonard.
It's, is that his son? Yeah.
I mean, not Mark Leonard. Nimoy? Sorry, Dad. Yeah,
no. His son. It's a story.
Leonard Nimoy.
I don't know. I can't remember.
I don't remember his son's name.
But it's done by his son about his father, mm-hmm. Leonard. So yeah, it's
the one that married Dax.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Beat me to the punch.
Yep.
Thanks.
But it is excellent. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I've been kind of avoided watching it because I have a feeling I'm going to cry.
Oh,
so,
you're going to cry. If you don't cry, you don't have a heart. That's what I'm missing.
Well, I mean, I cry like at the drop of a dime, so.
Extra tissues.
All right.
Excellent.
Good to
know. Cool.
I cry sometimes. Not at the drop of a dime. At the end of Speed Racer, man, I cannot, I'm not even joking. I ugly cry more times than not at the end of Speed Racer. Just, I can't take it.
You know, it's great. Isn't it crazy? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sabrina.
No.
Isn't it crazy that these are people that we have, like, not met, that we're not close to, that we don't have any personal connection to. Yet, like, when Leonard Nimoy passed away, I was devastated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
it hurt. Mm-hmm. And these are people that, again, that I don't have any personal connection to. So isn't it just interesting how that works, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I disagree that you don't have any personal connection to it.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I don't know them in real life.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying? I see what you're saying. And I totally get it. I've been reading this nonfiction book lately called Sapiens, and it's about like the history of the world of humankind in general. Mm-hmm. And part of it is talking about community. You know, like we had very small communities pretty much up until the Industrial Revolution, where like you were born in a town, you lived in a town, you knew everybody in the town. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of lost that. And I was thinking about, like, personally myself, you know, what stories do I have in common with other people? Because, you know, like, for example, in a Native American tribe, everybody in that tribe has, like, the same creation myth. And they have the same, like, stories of their ancestors, and they can all talk about those stories, and that's how they understand each other. Hmm. The United States culture is very diverse and young, and it has all sorts of, like, that melting pot that everybody was talking about. So we don't necessarily have cultural stories in common, but we do have TV shows and movies in common. Mm-hmm. And that's why, societally, like, we have memes and references that make references to references. And we're constantly quoting TV shows and movies at each other. That's because those are the stories that we have in common. So in the same way that I think, like, an ancient Greek person would have felt close to stories of their mythos, we feel close to the people who tell us our stories.
Absolutely.
The story that the four of us have in common is Star Trek, mm-hmm. and we're close to the things that are part of that Star Trek story, so it makes perfect sense that we'd be sad when Spock passes away.
Yeah.
Even if it was just that, plus Nimoy was like everybody's granddad, so...
Yeah.
So long as we all understand. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I felt very sad when, when Scotty passed away. And, like, just everyone. Mm-hmm. Like, you feel close to the whole group. But for some reason, Spock has more, if that makes sense. Like, there's more to it. I don't know why, but you just feel more connected to Spock or to Leonard Nimoy. I don't know. It's crazy.
No, it's not.
Nope, it makes sense. Like, it's part of our lives.
Yeah.
As long as we understand that, like, we do because we're adults, that we aren't actually, we don't know them actually.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt that, you know, they and their stories are part of our lives.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
For sure. I mean, like, you remember, Nimoy is specific for us because we're, you know, big Star Trek people. But just for, like, a comparison, remember when Robin Williams passed away?
Devastated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was everyone's.
Like everybody's favorite, like, funny.
Nano.
Anyway. Leonard Nimoy also touched the Transformers fandom because he was also Galvatron, and little known, he was Unicron at the end of the movie because Orson Welles died before he finished doing his recordings. So at the end of
I definitely didn't either. That.
Wow, yeah, at the end of Transformers the movie, Unicron's still talking his game and stuff, and then, like, if you listen closely. It's not Orson Welles anymore. It's a slowed down Leonard Nimoy voice.
Oh, interesting. Well, and Leonard Nimoy was in Fringe, which was one of my favorite sci-fi J.J. Abrams shows. Which I was excited. I was so excited when he came, like when he was a part of it.
Oh,
absolutely.
I'm sure every time he walks onto a screen, you're like,
I mean, my little kid comes out. Me too. Absolutely.
Yeah,
like, I saw the news post about it where, like, the crowd went wild when they're like, "Holy shit, Nimoy was in the show!"
Yep.
So that was like a
screen or something.
Oh yeah.
Right. But yeah, I feel like them bringing back Spock was clumsy.
Agreed.
More dogging on it. it's kind of like, what? Vulcans can do that? That's a pretty huge. Advantage about being able to move your life around like that, and worth studying. If anyone, we're not going to talk about it ever again.
One dude be like, "Vulcan mysticism is crazy. It doesn't make sense to me." They did say the Vulcans hadn't done it in hundreds of years, though. So a big question mark there.
They were like,
"We'll just make it this esoteric magic power that they kind of have that they rarely use." You're like, but why would they not use it constantly?
Yeah,
and then why would Spock of all people use it at this moment?
Because Spock happens to have a new body. Mm-hmm. That's why.
Well, and I love that she's like, "Well, haven't done this before, but here, I'll give it a try."
I think there's some expanded universe stuff where they talk about how Sirach still has his Katra somewhere on Vulcan. Like, Sirach's Katra is still alive somewhere on Vulcan. Oh. So, IDK about that.
You mean Sarek?
No.
Oh, like, there's actually a Sirach?
Sirach. Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
Seeing like, that his Katra has been entombed somewhere for, like, thousands and thousands of years.
Oh.
That's cool. Again, this is probably expanded universe, like, it not super. Unlike the Star Wars ones, like, people weren't really keeping an eye out for things making sense in the Star Trek novels. They're more like published fanfics. So, meh. But yeah, it was definitely something that they came up with to be like, how are we going to save Spock? McCoy.
Right.
McCoy has a soul. Souls, it's fine.
So, speaking of bringing Spock back, am I the only one that finds it a little awkward when he goes through Ponfar?
No.
Michael and I were just talking about this. That's actually my least favorite scene in this movie.
Yeah.
And the whole thing makes me profoundly uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, because, like, isn't he an underage, like, teen, right?
Yeah, it's like, basically, he's a teenager and also simultaneously her mentor.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like a scene of, like, necessity. Like, he's going through Ponfar. If he doesn't bang somebody, he will die. Like, I can't.
What?
Why?
Wait, what?
Did they?
You don't.
What? Okay. Did you miss
it? Ponfar
comes and goes out of my consciousness. So when they were saying it, this time I was like, wait, doesn't that have to do with, like, sex or something? Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. So basically she was saying he's going through puberty, and if I don't bang him, he's going to die. So they she went and banged
sex?
Him in the cave. Yeah, horrifying. Right?
That's what I'm saying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep, horrifying.
I know.
No,
they touch fingers. Star Trek. Yeah, there's.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, that's
you're
the beginning.
Sweet. You're sweet, Keith.
Oh my
you're
God.
Adorable, Keith. You wish, Keith.
Holy
yeah,
shit.
We just blew Keith's mind.
Oh no. Really?
Yeah. That's what
sorry,
fun
Keith.
Part is, man. Yeah.
You have to sex or you die.
Yeah. Yep.
You have to sex or you die.
Yeah, every 7 years.
I believe it's described as a biological imperative. You've clearly never seen a mock time.
I was like, when I was thinking, I was like, Ponfar, isn't that, I guess, puberty or something? Yeah, it's just puberty.
Nope.
He just has to calm down. Mm. We're going to touch fingers, chill out.
No.
We wish. No. That would be nice. There's actually a Star Trek novel where Spock and Saavik get married, and that horrifies me. That straight horrifies me.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that fine? Like, isn't Spock like 300 years old or something like that?
I mean, no, he's not 300 years old. He's certainly older than her. But what weirds me out about it is that, like, the first time that we see their relationship, it's literally just like
he's a teenager,
a mentor student. Yeah. He's the captain, and she's like learning. Mm-hmm. How to be a good Starfleet officer from him, and it's a very like respectful professional relationship. Mm-hmm. And then she goes down on Earth to save him. She finds him as a teen. She's like, I have to bang him or else. And then they get married. No.
Yeah.
Whoa, not okay with it.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I mean. That scene. That's the only like scene where I'm just it irked me, and I was like,
And
I know.
Well, okay. Is this the first time we've heard of Ponfar?
No.
Okay, then no. Yeah. I'm just saying that, like, to the story's credit, like, they didn't skip it. Like, this is a thing that
But I kind of wish they had.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean,
they could have skipped it, and the movie would have been fine. The movie would have been fine if it wasn't in it.
They couldn't skip it unless they aged him faster than Ponfar hit him.
I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe. Like, I understand the argument. I see why they put it in there. I'm glad that they didn't make it like a romantic scene.
Yeah.
And it was like shown as like she doesn't really have a choice. She has to do it. But it seems clear to me that the person who wrote that other novel didn't feel the same way about it as me.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, I'm like, what was this? 3-5 years later, I'm finding this out. Because I'm sorry. I pay attention to these things. And I'm like, nobody I've ever talked to talks about that having happened. And like, I was watching it. I'm just, and it never occurred to me that they had sex.
That's what Ponfar is.
I guess you're watching with too many people who've seen TNG but not TOS, Keith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently.
I gotta watch that scene again. It's not sexy. It's just like a whole new context of what's happening.
It's not a sexy
on the
scene anyway. Yeah, don't worry about it. God, it's wild.
Yeah.
Also, what I don't understand is why baby Spock, when he left the coffin, didn't wear the robe.
Yes. And why would you go in the direction of the cold?
That we find him naked and freezing later. Oh, no, that's not the direction of the cold. The problem is the genesis system is so unstable that, like, an area that is subtropical becomes a snowy area. Like,
gotcha. Okay. I thought that, like, there's, like, subtropical next to tropical, and he's like, I'm wandering off toward the cold while naked. Which is, like, the most uncomfortable thing I've ever seen that also sticks with me. Like, the idea of being naked in the winter just...
In the snow, yeah, horrifying.
It's just the worst situation I could ever think to be in.
I mean, the good news is when they filmed that, they used cotton powder.
Funny, as I said that sentence, I'm looking at my notes, and one of them, my eyes go on and says, being naked in the winter has to be the worst thing that could ever happen. So, yes, past Keith and present Keith and all versions are like, that scene just, like, you'd be like 15 seconds away from dying to me, it seems like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk for a second about the scene at the very beginning when we first see Christopher Lloyd's Klingon.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that lady in the ship.
Yeah.
She has a very small role, but like she does a great job. She's just like, you will like it. And he's like, oh, so you've seen the information. Yes, sir. Unfortunate. And like her face is just like, oh.
Damn it.
Well, that sucks.
She was a good sport about it. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. I think that's actually one of my favorite representations of like Klingon honor type thing where she's he's like, you can't have seen it. And she's like, well, all right.
Do what I gotta do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the captain's like, when do I get paid? And she's like, hold on.
That is one of the tropes in all fiction that always makes you laugh. Hey, I want what's coming to me. Oh, you're good.
Pew, pew.
Never say that in the movie.
Or never say, I'll be right
when
back.
When do I get paid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just will not go well. Michael, what's your note? Next
one. I was going back to the beginning part with the Kirk's speech. It's talking about... paid for the party with our dearest blood. was another line that really stood out to me when that one guy was asking if they were going to get like a hero's welcome.
Our dearest blood.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was just another line that really struck me.
What an awkward thing to ask the captain after he just lost right. his friends.
It's like, are we at a party? Fuck you.
We having a party?
Yeah.
Hey, dude.
Do they do the absent friends line in this movie?
They do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And actually, I had a note about that that I wanted to bring up later. But that's just another one of the things that J.J. Abrams' Star Trek was like, yoink.
The way they did in... No, not J.J. Abrams. It was the other guy, Justin Lin. I love the way he did it in Beyond. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. right as he says that, the camera... There's just like a quick, beautiful edit where they look at Anton Yelchin really quickly.
Fuck. And yeah, then it fucks me up.
And I'm like, oh, man.
To absent friends, Anton. No. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well done.
And I know that it was written in as a reference deliberately by Simon Pegg. Yep. You know it was.
It was well done. It was all subtle. If you don't know what happens, you wouldn't even know that that's why it was done. But yeah, it is beautiful.
Yeah. Keith, what's your next note?
Next note. See, Vulcans do that? No. Okay, my next note is the meat microbes in the casket. Every time I see that, I feel like the first assumption should be, oh my God, they ate the fucking body.
Right? I know.
I never thought about that. So
they're only on the outside unfazed. Of the casket, though.
Huh?
They're only on the outside of the casket, though.
I thought the casket was open, like, wasn't it?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. The casket was open. It's like around the casket. So I just, every time I think that, I'm like, these things on the planet just eat the body, but they're like, oh, my body's gone. I'm like,
And a lot of stomachs.
So I'm always interested. Like every time I see it, I'm just like, that's not the conclusion you come to. That these
did they have eating mouths?
I assume anything on any planet can eat.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
And like, yeah, the guy's so unafraid by like he just steps through them and stuff. I'm just like, dude, like these things can be poisoned. I always remember those things, and I like the idea that there are microbes grown. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. I like how they specified that there were the microbes on the outside of the torpedo tube that got shot through, and that's why they're, like, on the ground now. Mm-hmm. Something that I noticed in here that I found lacking in Picard was that they actually do that fake science.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. There's a bunch of places where they do, like, technobabble. That one's, like, not necessarily technobabble, where they're like, there were microbes, and now they just evolved really quickly. Like, that's cool, but what are they eating? But, I mean, I guess nothing on Genesis is actually eating. It's just appearing and disappearing. But they also did that with the whole conversation about proto-matter that I thought was really funny. Because she's like, use proto-matter, but the thing that every scientist agrees is totally unstable. And he's like, yeah, I used a shortcut. And she was like, you're just like your father. hilarious. But also, I just think it's funny that the whole thing was proto matter because the prefix proto just means like before, right? So it's like
before matter.
Not the best way to name that. Like proto matter is matter that existed before matter existed, I guess. Why would it be unstable? Because that's when the Big Bang. So I actually really like that they did that.
Proto magic matter.
And that it ended up being right, like, it isn't stable. Oh, look, it built a planet and wrecked the planet simultaneously in, like, 3 hours. Whatever.
Let's never visit this idea ever again, or do they ever again?
They don't, but it makes sense because Genesis didn't work properly. It was a weapon, like the Klingon said, but also because the head scientist who came up with it is dead. Mm-hmm. Goodbye, right. David.
I guess if I was going to hold it to the same level that I hold Picard, then you have an entire galaxy of scientists that, you know, could do it again. But I guess they don't come across. I don't know. Anyway, I don't need to think about that one.
It gets rejected as a failure, I think.
I mean, it's a planet buster.
Yeah.
It is a planet buster. We don't want planet busters, okay? Those are for the Empire.
Cardassians probably do.
Sons of bitches.
Yeah, well, fuck the Cardassians. All right. Michael, what's your next
one? I put Christopher Lloyd as Commander Kruge, I don't know how you say that. But I don't know. I thought he did a really good job. I was trying to look up the Klingon that was in, was it the motion picture? I can't find his, can't find it now. But I thought he did. I thought Christopher Lloyd did a lot better than the other, than that guy in the motion picture, where he was.
I agree.
What's that?
I agree.
Well, he was like a, in general, he was like a better Klingon. But I don't know. I like Christopher Lloyd in Back to the Future, so anything he's in probably I'll like. But
I saw something on, like, I saw something on the internet,
like Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, I saw something on the internet where it was like, name one thing Christopher Lloyd did that wasn't amazing as far as like acting and stuff, and it showed a bunch of like different characters, and every one of them's like, yeah, like, yeah, he was amazing. Christopher Lloyd's amazing.
Yeah, you've seen him in Clue, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've seen him in Clue, right?
Not in a long time, but yes.
Dear God.
Yes.
We're all rewatching Clue soon.
Next watch party. We're watching
it is
Clue.
It's one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite movies.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah, Roger Rabbit. I mean, he's amazing. Like the man is is a treasure. He's amazing. Really? So there isn't one character I've seen him do that isn't done 100%. Like just amazing. He's such a great actor.
He never phones it in.
Otherwise, I would be complaining about his performance as a Klingon that's not very Klingon, but I don't care at all.
Right? Because it's
he's so cool.
His Klingon like accent is wonky, but that could just be the clan he's from.
Exactly.
I'm good. I'll make up anything he wants to agree with it because I do love him.
Oh, yeah.
And like how he is. And yeah, I had a lot of fun with him.
My next note is that Genesis was quarantined to force the Mad Caper. And then Picard stole. it's just like this recurring theme in Star Trek movies where they're like, for some reason, you cannot have the ship or the usual resources that you have. Mm-hmm. In this case, like, you're not allowed to go to Genesis, Captain, Admiral. but the same as, like, when they were like, no, Picard, we can't give you a ship. Come on, man. So I thought that was funny.
Yeah, they keep getting nerfed. Like the ship is still, you know, it's.
I mean, if you
jumped.
Just give them Enterprise, it would be too easy. You have to steal Enterprise.
Or in Razzicon, they find a nebula that, you know, drops shields and sensors, so that they didn't do it in the motion picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the motion picture is nothing like any of the other films.
Yeah. God bless its heart.
Well, I like how this one had kind of like a heist, you know, feeling, heist movie feeling.
Yeah. It sure did.
A buddy heist or something. That was really good.
It's definitely a heist. Everybody does their own little like sneaky thing. Mm-hmm. I love Uhura's just like, I'll meet you at the rendezvous. I'll have Mr. Adventure eating out of my hands. And then she really meets them on Vulcan. I fucking love.
As the heist part, let's see. I'm not sure if I dislike it as much as like I'm gonna shift in my seat a little uncomfortably because I'm like, stop trying to be Star Wars. Because it feels like I'm like, what Star Trek? What problem?
I mean,
do you
have Star Wars is a heist, right?
Go ahead.
The first Star Wars is a heist, right?
Oh no, I mean like they start wearing all these like Star Wars looking costumes, and they're not being Starfleet. And just like, what is? Why Star Trek seem to have a problem doing a Starfleet adventure with Starfleet uniforms, a Starfleet spaceship, and not blowing it up? Here, they're like, you know, they're wearing their rad Star Wars costumes and stealing a ship instead of like, you know, doing a mission for Starfleet.
Uh huh.
I don't know. I don't like the Enterprise crew being rag to heg. There you go.
That is fair enough. Can we talk about the Grissom?
The Gwa?
The Grissom.
What's that?
The Grimson. The USS Grimson.
Oh, the Excelsior class ship?
Yeah, the science ship.
The science ship. Never mind. The science ship. That was a.
Not the Excelsior.
That is a pretty
Oh, you're right. The Grimson is the Excelsior, but I mean the science ship. Yep.
Yeah, science ship is not a good looking ship. And
disagree. Some,
I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I like it.
I don't like the saucer section being like hovering above the fuselage in it just seems...
Yeah, because it doesn't have, like, that central post. It has, like, the two side connectors.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable looking. So, like, when it blows up, I'm like, ha ha.
Okay. I see. I really liked, I kind of like that shape, but you're right that in space it would be exceedingly fragile.
Yeah. Which I think they're trying to give off that feeling. And
they're like, it's a science ship. It'll break.
Yeah, that was a weird... I very much love that we get to see another design, though, and that's not just, like, cloning another kind of, like, Enterprise ship. That was really cool. I like that a lot. But, yeah, you're not... You should have yourself an escort, buddy, because space is dangerous.
Space is dangerous. Michael, what's your next note?
I have the... We talked about the story of the Katra and the living spirit. It's like, yeah, just what we talked about before, just to, you know, how... Mm-hmm. Why don't they ever do it again? And just kind of came out of nowhere. But
we're just going to make this Vulcan mysticism up real fast. Hey, hold on. I thought Vulcans were supposed to be super logical. Yeah, but they're also touch telepaths. Ha ha, bye.
Touch telepaths.
Or it's like on the old Batman and the movie show in the 60s where like they had a machine to do
the
everything.
The Adam West one.
I don't know if you remember that. Yeah, it was kind of like that.
Tactile psychokinesis. There you go.
You, sort of like that machine in Picard that's just like, imagine whatever you wanted to do.
Exactly.
And it does it.
Yeah.
it reminds me of what kids would do if they're like, no, I want my character to come back to life. Oh, okay. How about you put your life in this other, and then we go on a mission to get your soul back? Or I'm like, yeah, you guys do whatever you want. You guys earned a lot of goodwill. And
all right.
I don't need to hold you too much.
I'm finding the more distance I get from Picard, the show, I'm like the harsher I am on it. I'm like, yeah, that was bullshit. I mean, I still love Picard, but I'm like, yeah, that was stupid.
Keith, he's coming over to our side.
No, God damn it. Jay, save me.
We're just trying to help.
What? I'll tell you after I record. Sorry. Kiddos, like,
no, that's fine.
My kiddos here in Keith, my kiddos in the room. He's like, why? How dare who? What they do? What do you do? What they do? Like, I'll tell you after the podcast.
Are they being mean
buddy.
To you, Daddy? Yeah.
I'll tell you after, bud.
Keith, what's your next note?
Let's see. There's a quick one where Sulu was getting like stared down by that taller dude, and like by the end of it, Sulu takes
let's
him
talk
down.
About,
like,
all right, let's talk about the Sulu scene.
Oh man, I love that where he's just like, you know, stare him down. I forgot what happened. So I was like expecting Sulu to, you know, play it cool. But Sulu takes the guy down. I'm just like, yeah, dude, he saved the galaxy. Who are you? No one even told you your name. So yeah.
The reason you forget is because they don't even show it to us. You see the guy standing up and he's like massive and he goes, what are you going to do, tiny or whatever? And then it cuts to Kirk and whoever Kirk's with me in that scene, I forget. And then he walks in and Sulu's already gotten the dude against the wall with his arm behind his back.
Badass.
Don't even see man. It.
You just want to tangle with this guy who's, you know, seen stars die and be born. No, you're a guard. You don't step to Sulu like that. Anyway.
Yeah. You're dumb. You can't do anything to me. I'm Sulu.
A bigger note, though, is how much I love hating the Excelsior class ship.
She's a fat bottom ship. Girl.
Yes, like it's
my favorite type, neck. Buddy. Come on.
The cells are too small for its body.
I like how there's just like this massive like bottom section, and then there's like a hole cut out so that when the energy comes out of the center point, it doesn't like wreck the ship.
Your body shaming
is a great crossover point.
But, I mean, it probably has more protection than the engine room in Enterprise, for example.
That's true.
Yeah. But, like...
But if the engine room explodes, you're all dead.
So, like, the Enterprise comes into dock, and then, like, you see that massive Excelsior, and it's, like, it's supposed to be the better ship or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I just love, like, when the Enterprise escapes and, like, the Excelsior's like, let's take him out! And it goes, choo-choo-choo-choo! Like, ah-ha-ha! You're a piece of crap ship.
I love that part. It's like, would it really make that noise? I don't know, but it was funny.
It did make a goofy noise.
Yeah.
Wait, just turning off. Why wouldn't it make that noise? It's in space. Oh, right.
Not working engines go. Although that's that was also the sound from Star Wars, the Falcon.
Yeah,
also didn't go to warp.
I was surprised that when the ship exploded, we did not hear a Wilhelm scream.
Yeah.
I was just thinking of the Wilhelm scream, yeah.
There actually wasn't one. I like wrote down that there wasn't one.
The Wilhelm scream was way more rare and like hard to find. It wasn't until recently in modern films.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I was like, Keith, why are you sounding like that?
I know.
Sorry. He's pushing his glasses like, up his nose.
Who's this fifth host? Who's this new person?
Yeah. Something like this
mic. I noticed in like Lord of the Rings came out, also in the Wilhelm scream just started appearing like everywhere.
Oh, is that what brought it back? Lord of the Rings. All right. Well, I'm due for another Lord of the Rings rewatch.
I just got Lord of the Rings like 12 to hours. Show the kiddo.
You hear it twice in Return of the King.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I used to call it the Star Wars scream.
The Star Wars scream. It's old.
Yeah.
I noticed it was like in all George Lucas movies. Mm-hmm. And then... it wasn't until the birth of the internet that I was like, whoa.
Wait, all of them, including like graffiti?
I don't know about that one. I've only seen graffiti like maybe once or twice.
Oh, man. But I haven't seen graffiti in a long time. But I don't know where you would put a Wilhelm screaming at.
I doubt he'd do it there because the graffiti was like his kind of like, let me see if I can do something for normal people. He wasn't like trying to be George Lucas then.
For normal people, huh?
Yeah, he was a dare from Francis Ford Coppola who says, dude, just try making a normal movie for once and see how it goes. He's like, all right, I'll do American Graffiti and let's see how it does. And
interesting.
He's like, aha, yeah, Francis, I did it. And I made a lot of money, too, in your face. Yeah, it was a bet.
I did not know that.
Well, thank you, Coppola. I quite like American Graffiti.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah. I saw it recently for the first time, like maybe this or last
year. Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah, it never comes on, like, I don't remember ever
it's
on
a rare,
TV,
yeah.
I
think.
Yeah. It's one of my dad's favorite movies, so I've seen it a lot. It's good. Mm.
Yeah, actually, I've probably only seen it because my dad showed it to me, too.
Mm-hmm.
When I was young. I think the first time I saw Indiana Jones, like, we were talking about Han Solo, and then he was like, I've got another movie for you, and he showed me American Graffiti. That's probably what happened.
It's pretty good.
It's good. Mm.
I like the scene at the end with the plane.
Oh, yeah. When Han Solo...
Favorite Savik?
What's that?
Who's your favorite Savik, Michael?
My favorite Savik?
Yeah. This one or Christy Alley?
I kind of like the Christy Alley one a little bit better. I don't know why.
I'm good. Okay.
No, go ahead.
I love Robin Curtis. So I'm like, yep, no. Nope,
well,
I like
my
this
favorite
one
is the one we see in Undiscovered Country. Did you know that was supposed to be that actress in Undiscovered Country was the first one, but then she had to drop out. Then went to Christy Allen.
Oh, really?
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah,
know
she's
that.
Friends with someone in like the cast or crew or something like that. So she's supposed to be it, but couldn't be because of something happened. So then they're like, hey, we're doing another movie. Do you want to do it this time? She's like, all right, yeah. But we're going to make a new character for you, but you're acting the same, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why those two characters are similar. Okay, yep. Okay. Because I know a lot of people who straight up can't tell the difference between Valeris and Sarek.
It's really hard. Like, yeah, they really, all three of them blend hard.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, Kim Cattrall.
I am offended that the plot of somebody betraying Spock was supposed to be Savik. I think that's very rude.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, she's cool. She was a good villain.
Mm. Yeah, she was.
I liked her.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to count her as the Savix. She's a bit of a different character. She does a great job, though.
Kirstie Alley, then, because like she is otherworldly beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love her so much, and I loved her in Cheers.
Yeah, I definitely don't think I could. Kirstie Alley's Savix is great because she feels more like direct and in control than Robin Curtis's. But I like Robin Curtis's like soft kind of like I'm Vulcan, I'm logical, but also I care about people. Yeah, they're different, but they both do a great job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Robin Curtis is just your favorite because Robin Curtis is your favorite. Jay?
Yeah. yeah.
That's why I picked Christy Alley. So.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. I don't want to be mean to her or anything.
Can't help it.
I'm sure she's a lovely woman. She's definitely not my favorite because, like, if she ever hears this, you're I love you. You're a beautiful woman. But like,
wait, are we talking about Robin?
She seems like this the role. She disappears to me. Like, she's not as much of a forefront character, and almost her performance and character just disappears in the background for me when she's doing it.
Yeah,
but you know, I'm glad people like her. She's very nice. If you're listening to this ever, I'm so sorry.
Keith's email address is Keith.
Yeah, right.
I wish her the best of luck.
I did meet her. I did meet her at the convention.
Cool.
So that was pretty fun. Yeah.
Nice.
She was awesome.
Keith,
she shows up on TNG. Let's see. My next one would be Star Trek movie is pretty small, and this movie Starfleet only has. Oh yeah. there's like a thing that people dog on. Later Star Trek movies where their Starfleet's very small, where you only have like just a few number of ships. You go into that dock where you're supposed to have a fleet of ships and like you only see two ships. It's kind of like, yeah, another nitpick. Sorry.
Just assumed they were out doing stuff in like the other ships.
I'm really confused as to why you're apologizing for nitpicking when it's one of our favorite things to do.
Yeah.
When I critique, I want it to be, there's a legit critique, but this is like something where movies are just pretend, and that is like picking on a little bit too small of a detail, I think. But I think. And also I think we got spoiled by DS9, where you did get to see the fleet of ships. And if you're around Earth, and also you play Star Trek Online, I should be seeing lots of ships just flying around. But they keep the movie down to, and like, you know, they have jobs and lives. They can't spend all day making new ships for me.
They should, but they won't.
Yes. Yes.
Your budgets, man. Budgets, okay?
Right.
CGI wasn't a thing. They couldn't copy and paste the same ship over and over and over.
It's too soon.
Too soon.
As we work our way through the movies, we slowly start making fun of Picard again.
But yeah, that's my that was my quick note. The other one we talked about, which was the Bird of Prey and the Enterprise doing a cowboy draw in space. I love that. And also in all the fiction I've ever seen, there is a distortion in space where a ship is cloaked. So I was really happy that finally someone's like, yeah, that thing, yeah, but don't ignore that little whirly stuff. Target it. And then the ship they thought they had to jump on, but it's the Enterprise crew and just got them. So yeah, love that shot.
You know what I never noticed about this movie before? They killed the dog.
Oh, the Targ?
Dog.
The Targ.
Yeah.
Poor guy, I know.
I mean, I know it's a Targ, but it's it is made to look disgusting and to not be like, oh, he's a cute pet. But the fact is, they killed the pet in this movie. Brood.
Monster. Monster.
Whatever.
I know.
It's a pet to a Klingon.
It's a monster to a monster. That's a monster.
Your point?
You can kill monsters. This is not a loving dog. This is like a thing that's ready to kill.
This is like he pets it but everybody else is like,
you don't know that.
Isn't it chained up or something? It's always ready to kill. So
maybe he was just hungry. Come on.
He's just hungry.
Well, because it's a monster.
That's a funny bit, though, where he leaves the ship and he's like, and feed my dog. And they're like,
you do it.
Michael, what's your next note?
My next note was going to talk about DeForest Kelly, you know, and McCoy doing, you know, having Spock in his brain. But I did a Google search on Katra Living Spirit. And the third entry is Katra, the Erotic Spirit, Fan Lore. Just a Klingon. So anyway, we'll talk about that later.
Really?
Let's not.
Moving spirits is sexual.
That'll be okay. Off. Yeah, that'll be off.
No, but I thought DeForest Kelly did an amazing job in this one, acting like crazy with Spock in his brain.
Yeah, like him losing his like, what's McCoy and what's Spock, especially in the bar.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
I found it inconsistent though. I couldn't tell. Like, under what circumstances does he start spocking and whatnot?
No circumstances. Like what causes it? In there.
Yeah, but he, sometimes he acts like Spock. Sometimes he doesn't. I couldn't figure out like what would trigger. Yeah, there was.
Yeah, I don't think there was a trigger. It was just kind of going in and out.
It was just always there. Yeah. Like.
So that was my...
Like, you can't always tell I'm depressed, but I'm always depressed. I don't think there was a particular trigger for that. It was just, like, always just kind of Spock and kind of McCoy. And I think my favorite bits of those meeting are, like, when mm-hmm. McCoy will say something very Spock-like, like, that's not logical, but also swear simultaneously. Nice.
Yeah.
DeForest Kelly's amazing. I mean, he was just great. He's great. And... Yeah, his whole...
Almost a walking cartoon character. He's such an icon.
Truly. When I was still thinking about like maybe having kids, my plan was to name them Dee and Forrest.
nice.
A third one, Kelly.
Nice, and that is, that's why we're friends.
That's why.
Would Dee have been short for something?
What?
Would Dee have been short for something?
No, just Dee.
All right, the letter?
D-E-E.
Oh, cool.
Yes. Oh, okay. Okay.
Although the letter is fun, too. I hope they just write it D, and then their teachers are like, wait, what? D. It's never going to happen. I'm not going to have kids, but
that's my name.
I'll just have to name my dogs that instead.
There you go.
I'm looking through Robin Curtis's IMDb page, because I feel bad. I don't know like why I feel bad about like saying that she wasn't that noticeable.
Yeah, that was your opinion.
I definitely found Selvig very soft in that movie as opposed to that's a fair assessment. I think part of it was in the writing.
Yes.
But certainly. And it might have been Nimoy's directing too. Who knows? Speaking of Nimoy's directing, it was particularly obvious to me in the Kirk and Sarek mind melt scene. But there's a lot of great close-ups in this. Like, shots that you really didn't see in other Star Trek movies. Like, just a mouth, just the eyes. And they were really nice. Mm-hmm. Like, good work there.
He did a great job. On that Sarek scene, I passed up a note that how much Sarek kept on saying, hey, I think Spock's probably in your mind. Let me check your head. Let me check your head really quick. And Kirk's like, no. There's nothing in my head, I swear to you. He's like, no. And, like, Sarek kept pushing at it, where Kirk's like, it never happened. And then, like, he makes Kirk experience the worst moment of his life again. And he's like, oh, well, I guess you were right.
Thanks, buddy.
I thought that was kind of funny.
It's funny that you bring that up, because my note literally says, Sarek is totally lacking in social graces, as usual.
Such a dick.
But the fact that he assumes Spot would give Kirk his cadre is really funny, too, to me, because... you know, like, I'm sorry if this is something that you're not interested in, but fandom history is something that I'm interested in, and we can thank Star Trek fandom in particular for like gay fics being called slash fics, because they started with Kirk Spock, and the scene just makes me laugh really hard, because it's like Sarek's like, well, isn't he your boyfriend? Who the hell else would he pick?
You guys are close. Don't like, no, like you're not. We all see it.
Yeah, I know what's going on. You don't have to tell anything, but I already know. And then Kirk says,
your son means more to me than you could ever know. And Sarek's like, I'm just
damn
saying.
Damn right.
Clearly I know, otherwise I wouldn't be here.
And then some bitch, I guess he is in your bed. Sorry about that.
Sorry, I fucked your head up.
My bad.
Yeah, my bad.
No, instead he's in his frenemy's head. He thought it would be funny.
Frenemy, cool.
Bones is just like, stop it, get out.
Yeah, Bones made a joke about that. He's like, oh, yeah, he said, it's for all those times he was wrong.
Yeah, all those arguments he lost.
All these arguments he lost. Yeah. That bastard.
That was genius. Yeah. I love that moment.
Jeez, yeah. Honestly, that was great writing. Just having it be McCoy and having that whole, like, you know, thing go down. It's just brilliant, because that's not, everyone would have expected Kirk,
including Sarek.
You know what I mean? Because they were BFFs, you know? And McCoy is like the last person on the planet that would allow his brain to like meld with Spock, but he did. You know, it's what happened.
McCoy. This is not the first time that he gets forcibly mind melded with by a Spock. Not that Spock, but it's and it wasn't that Bones either. But it's not the first time.
Yeah, no, I know.
Which other time are we talking about?
So. Mirror, mirror, my friend.
Oh. Okay.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I've seen it. Is that a TOS episode?
It is a TOS episode. It's the first mirror episode ever. And I mean, we eventually should, like, will do an episode on the mirrors.
And do an episode. Mirror episode.
So we'll get there. We'll get there. Don't you worry, Keith. You'll see it.
All right, cool.
I will slowly make you watch all of TOS. One episode at a time.
I'm looking forward to it. To see how, where it all started and all the references I probably wasn't catching when they were happening.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. Looking forward to it.
Hmm.
What's your next note, Keith?
I'll say again, I hate to high heavens they killed David.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah. Just kill.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so mean to Robin Curtis. She's a great person, but like, why didn't we kill her? Like, she's not a part of the crew. Well, yes, she is. Man, I just like they introduced him. Oh my God! Like, Kirk has a legacy that can live on beyond him. And
JK.
I'm glad we Oh my God! Yep, gotcha, Keith.
Psych.
Just stabbed him like it was nothing, and it went quick. And it was really dramatic.
What are they? What do they call that?
He was a plot device. Jobbed him, right?
Indeed.
He was a jobber.
I think they tried to make it like a valiant sacrifice because the dude was about to stab Savick, and then he stops him, and then that's why he's the one who dies. So like they made a cursory attempt at making him seem heroic, but it still comes off very much like, well, if we kill Spock, that would defeat the purpose of the movie. So who do we got, Savick or David? Who's gonna make Kirk cry? David? Okay, let's go David.
Who's gonna make Kirk? We gotta yeah, it's gotta hurt. So yeah.
Losing Savick would hurt Spock, but Spock doesn't remember who he is right now, so that's pointless. So we gotta kill David.
Yeah.
David was job. And yeah, the point, I'm not sure if I said it on this podcast where Jobber was.
You probably have, but I mean, why not?
But yeah, quickly, it's a wrestling term where they announce the threat. Like, if they put this, there's certain characters, sometimes certain wrestlers they use where they make you like that person and like they get so defeated that it's supposed to make you angry. And like, yeah, like they leave the stadium just furious, and they do this to people on purpose.
A great TOS example of jobbing, not TOS, a great TNG example of jobbing is like every episode where Worf gets his ass beat ever.
Oh yeah.
Worf is so tough. Check out him getting beat up so you can feel afraid of this person.
They announce the threat. Like, yeah, with David getting killed, now you know that shit is real and people can possibly die. And you should feel bad about it.
But we should have known that anyway, because he killed his girlfriend, like, right away. Sorry, my love.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she has great boobs, by the way.
Who's that?
Who does?
His girlfriend. Like, this is the first time I've noticed it. The Klingon lady at the beginning.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Like, normally I just, you know, because she's a very small character, and that's not the things that I pay attention to. Typically in a scene like that.
These boobs did not catch my attention, I'll admit it.
But watch it again, you'll be surprised they did. The costume was like, this is this cool Klingon lady, and also here are our boobs.
Boobs.
Her boobs are very nice. take a look at that costume again, and you'll be like, how did I not notice the first time? It just strikes me as odd that like that would be the costuming choice for a character that's on screen for like 3 minutes and who never speaks it. English more than like twice. It's
nice. Well, if I'm gonna be on screen, I'm gonna look good.
So I'm gonna be fucking hot for my. Well, she knew she was gonna be on the view screen, right? She was like, I'm gonna dress up for this.
I want people to notice me while I'm on the screen. So here it comes.
And he's like,
bring out the guns.
He's like, you gotta die now. And she's like, shame.
And yeah, I did think that was pretty interesting how honorable she took it. She's like, this is the job.
Okay. You gotta die now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, seems right. I am a Klingon. Klingon honor is very specific in this movie, but not necessarily reflective of Klingon honor in the rest of Star Trek.
I also with the kid, the son dying. I did like think of something to make myself feel like, I guess, better about it, which is, you know, if you're gonna die, Then I guess like it's kind of like appropriate to do it after achieving your dream of becoming a god and creating a planet, and therefore you have done a massive sin, and therefore you should probably die on that planet that explodes underneath you. So,
yeah,
he did cross a line he should not have done, and he paid the ultimate price for it. So,
and he paid the ultimate price because of his own choices, because he's the one who decided to use the proto matter, which is the only way the thing would have worked. So
he knew he shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
And then his last act did redeem himself to sacrifice himself for somebody else. But I was kind of hoping that like, all right, cool. Kirk's got a son, and like his son, maybe we could think about the adventures that he does as a scientist. And never mind.
Yeah, it'd been nice to have like a science show with him. But I mean, we do get a science captain. Janeway.
At least he died better than his father.
Science captain.
Didn't have like a bridge.
Why are we calling Janeway a science captain? Sorry.
Well, what?
Why are we calling Janeway a science captain versus any other captain?
Because she was a science officer before she became the captain. Whereas Kirk was like a tactical officer.
Yeah.
Whereas Picard was a commanding officer. Like he was always in the command track. Janeway was in the science track until she hit probably first officer.
Cool.
Or captain.
I'm not sure if I noticed this. And now I get to, you know, file that away as some knowledge on, like, oh, yeah, I guess they have to be, like, you know, low-level characters first before they...
Oh, right, she was the lieutenant at some point. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I guess my mind can easily see them going through captain school and then becoming a captain, but Picard was a pilot.
You can. I mean, there's three branches, operations, which is red shirts and TOS, and some of them become red shirts and some of them become yellow shirts in TNG. I don't really understand the costuming like distinction for TNG for red and sometimes I think red is just command.
It's supposed to be a thing.
Okay. Well, in TOS anyway, yellow is command, red is all of operations, blue is science. So Spock in theory would change his uniform between him being first officer and science officer. And then when he becomes captain, he would be switched over to yellow.
All right.
So cool. Janeway, science captain.
Mm-hmm. Right on. I don't remember her doing like...
There's coffee in that.
It's more obvious earlier on when you see her interacting with B'Elanna and they just like shoot off into excited techno babble together. In future seasons, Janeway becomes, you know, like big boss. I will go Rambo on everyone to save my crew, Janeway. So you don't see it as much. But you can kind of see it in the way she interacts with Seven also.
Like they nerf her intelligence like they do Sam Carter in Atlantis.
Because when you're in command, you can't be... Wait.
I thought that was the point to bring her on Atlantis. To double up on the science. But whatever.
I take it Carter's your greatest disappointment in SGA.
Yes. Yes. I thought I was going to get like a second hit of like enjoying Carter.
Nope. Sorry.
But she's nothing about the Carter that I like as a commander.
What season are you on now?
Last one of Enterprise. Okay. Last one of Atlantis. Then, where Woolsey. God bless him. He's awesome.
Yeah. Then you know, people felt the same way. They were like, we like Carter, but this is not the right role for her.
And I felt bad like when she was like kind of walking off the set. Like there's like this kind of meta moment where she's like, well, I hope I did a good job. And then, like, Rodney goes,
Rodney.
he's kind about it, but, like...
Well, I think right after that, she did Sanctuary, and she certainly got to produce Sanctuary because of her work in Stargate and Stargate Atlantis. So, worked out well for her. Sanctuary is fun, at least as much of it as I've watched Christopher Heyerdahl as two characters in that, as well as two characters in SGA. I love Christopher Heyerdahl.
Which one's that?
In Stargate Atlantis, he plays Holling, the Athosian that they meet at the beginning with the sun. And he also plays Todd.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Same guy.
I didn't notice.
In Sanctuary, he plays Jack the Ripper and a caveman butler, like a Neanderthal butler.
I don't hear you saying that Sanctuary is great.
That's because it's not great. It's fun. It's dorky.
Will I be enjoying Amanda Tapping on maybe close to the same level?
Her character in Sanctuary is a lot more stern and like closed off. And now I find Carter funner. But I definitely think it's worth watching if you're a fan of hers.
I'll give it a
and
shot.
You might like it more than me. I don't remember disliking it. It just like didn't stand out in my mind. It's amazing. You know, it's not an SGA for me.
Okay. But, and we got to this because we were talking about science officers.
Yes, that's how we got
nerf
here.
Being nerfed and
whoops.
It's like meanwhile back on the there Star Trek okay. podcast.
Because Carter's an excellent example, just like Janeway, of a science officer getting nerfed once they're no longer in a science position.
There we
go. All right. Michael, what's your next note?
I didn't have any other notes, but I was thinking about how David's death was at least better than his father's. You know, Kirk got... well, I mean, Kirk got, like, a bridge fell on him. Whereas at least David went out fighting, you know?
Yeah. Ouch. Yeah. I'm looking forward to us hitting that movie because it's going to get torn to pieces.
Oh, God, yeah. torn to pieces.
I am popping not happy bananas. With any of the Kirk scenes.
So that was my thought.
Nothing is canon after Undiscovered Country.
Oh, shit.
Marshmallows.
Oh, yeah, no. That TNG movie universe is its own small pocket universe to me, where they do whatever they want to do.
Yeah, there's like TOS, then the TOS movies, then TNG, then the TNG movies, then DS9, and Voyager, and Enterprise. And I'm like, okay, in the order in which I ignore them, TNG movies is first, Enterprise is second.
You ignore Enterprise?
Enterprise did a bunch of revision on canon stuff from the previous shows, so I just find it easier to ignore.
Oh. Enterprise won me over. It is the least, the lessest of all the series, I think.
the least
but
of
it won
the
me
series.
Over.
It did not win me over.
Damn.
That's surprising.
Sorry. Is it?
So it's last season to win me over, so I can see
that might be why, because I never made it to the last season.
Yeah.
Oh,
big shocker!
I did too, buddy.
I like Enterprise.
I'm right there with you.
Good.
Yeah, y'all feel free to like Enterprise.
I don't
I like
think
it better
it's,
than Discovery. For sure.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I also
Sabrina
like
refuses to watch Discovery,
but again, I've only seen Discovery season one. We've talked about this.
Am I right? Are you refusing to watch Discovery, Sabrina?
I'm not refusing to watch it. I just like I've seen season one and I don't really have an interest in seeing season two from all of the complaints I've heard about it until somebody sits next to me, gets drunk with me, and watches it with me. You see, I need somebody to do it with me.
Gotcha.
Actually, I watched the first season of Discovery with one of my friends, but they since moved away to Massachusetts, so that's not going to happen.
Okay.
Well,
We can do a watch together on Discord.
All right,
we'll get to it.
Yeah, I can do that. I have to admit, season one. So Discovery. I know we're going off topic, but
what? This is a Star Trek podcast. Discovery, we're still talking about Star Trek. We're fine. And Star Wars. And,
yeah, I know. Yeah, okay. Discovery's end, and I'm not going to know spoilers. But the setup for the next season, I am very excited about. Very excited about. And I'm not going to get into why or whatnot, but I think that season one and season two were kind of leading up to this. And I think season three is going to be the big season of, hey, this show, this show just...
Hopefully you're right.
It has my interest.
I'm going to disagree that it was leading up to this the whole time, because the writing team entirely swapped between season one and season two. My biggest complaint about Discovery is still, like, I think it was a really stupid idea of them to go 10 years before something we've already seen in the storyline, especially if the show was going to run 7 years, like the other shows have, because then it would stop 3 years before TOS. Yeah. So the ending they picked fixes that problem. It clears them out for worrying about, like, canon issues. So I think that was smart. I wish they had done it from the beginning. And I'm also still upset that it's been turned into not an ensemble show.
Michael is the chosen one.
Indeed.
Although, like, I do, I defend some of her Mary Sue-ness in the first season because, like, once again, like, she, like, people get on her for her fuck up at the first episode, but you're supposed to fuck up as a beginning character.
Yeah.
So that I don't count as a Mary Sue-ing, but because, like, she did wrong. She fucked up. And that's what you're supposed to be doing at the beginning of the story. People get mad at her for fucking up, but that's what you're supposed to do at the beginning of the story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, if you don't fuck up, how are you going to improve?
Exactly.
Yeah. It kicked her down to her lowest point. So
I think the things that annoyed me the most about Discovery were some of the things that were just like completely out of nowhere, like her and Sarek being psychically connected. I'm like, hey, you remember how Vulcans were touch telepaths? you can bond to one person, the person you marry. Did he marry his daughter? I don't think so.
And that also, was Mary Sue of her to be.
She's human, so
Spock's sister. Like, Spock's sister, like, that was something Kid Keith would have done. And like, or maybe even
yes. I'm not your writer. I have complained about
but,
that.
But to make yourself important, you have to like attach yourself directly to one of the stars. Yeah. Like,
That's a very basic like no-no in role playing. I find it funny that like stuff that people who write doing role play or who write doing fan fiction will learn this early on, like. When you start, you know, you make your characters related to other characters so that they have an excuse to be there, or you kill off their parents to make their life tragic, or, you know, like, whatever. These are mistakes that, like, everybody makes at first when we don't know how to be subtle, and then we learn subtlety later. So I find it really funny when I keep seeing it in movies and TV shows. I'm like, come on, guys. Yeah. Fanfiction writers have learned not to do this. You're being professionally... you have... This job is your professional job. You're being paid money to write a script. Come on.
I'm actually wondering, like, how don't these people know? They're seasoned veterans to me. How do you not know not to do that?
They like, probably do. They just don't care.
My sin of...
You know,
do they just don't care.
Really?
It's easy. It's easy to do it.
Like, they don't care. I mean, they... Take the, obviously, they have... Some of them have to know about it, but they do it anyway, right? So some of them are just like, fuck it, I'll just do it.
What are you going to do?
Exactly. Because we still watch it, right?
So we have to make ourselves.
There you go.
You still watch the show, don't you? No.
Shut up.
Yeah.
It is.
My sin of doing this was a Highlander fanfic I was doing for a character. And my character wandered the land and found Connor McLeod's grave, or his first grave, where he puts his sword in the dirt. And, like, I took that as my own sword. And, like, I saw my buddy Max wince as I mentioned that. And, like, I've never forgotten. I was like, yeah, I don't need to take his sword to be special. I should just have my own sword. I shouldn't have done that.
Hey, Keith.
Wow.
Sorry.
I love that you wrote a Highlander fan fiction. I'm just saying.
And I got to go thank Max now.
Yeah. Max didn't say anything. He did not say anything out loud. But I felt it when he got to the part where, like, I took Connor's sword.
He was trying to support you.
Yeah. He was really nice about that. And it's been like 20 years since I've done that. And I've still... Like when I like dog on new Star Wars for like Rey gets everything from everybody else and like keeps taking like, you know, legacy stuff.
Yep.
And I was like, Jesus, I did the exact same thing. And no one said anything.
Yes, you did it once and your friend winced and you went, oh, I see where I made a mistake. And somehow it's showing up in television over and over and over, in movies over and over and over.
In $100 million movies.
Yeah. What bothers me so much about them reusing tropes is that... like I was saying earlier, the thing that all of us have in common, the stories that we have in common, are no longer like creation myths or whatever. They're the shows that we watch. So our social behavior is based off like the shows that we saw when we were kids. You know, like that's how we learn how to behave. So the fact that they keep repeating these lazy, easy to write, but like not that creative tropes is really frustrating to me, because then real people copy those behaviors and they're not healthy.
Yeah, like the TNG taught me a lesson that I was hoping that I thought everyone got, which was no, like when you do a new story, like in real life, it's not going to be always the same people. So when TNG first happened, I sat down ready to see the adventures of Kirk, Spock, and Bones and like Scotty's children on an Enterprise. And then when it was none of them, I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Holy shit, it's complete new people. Oh my god, yeah, that's how it should be. And then like I thought they were gonna do that with Star Wars, but
they did not. They did not.
And then also then with new Star Trek, they can't help but like, you know, latch themselves onto legacy people. So
yeah, like that's what makes me feel a little uncomfortable about Strange New Worlds. Like they're like, yay, we're going back to the episodic format, and in theory, like Pike and Number One, They did so little in TOS because, you know, they were the first tester episode, and then it got cut up and made into that two-parter. So we really don't see a lot of them, so it doesn't, like, super bother me that they're bringing the characters back, because it's easy to, like, shift them over to what they need. But still, like, I don't need that. I don't need the original cast that we had for TOS and that we weren't allowed to use at the time. We'll just do the same show, but with them now. This is lazy. It just feels lazy.
Just make it, stop being scared of making new characters. I loved that experience. Although I guess there is business, and
truly,
like, and what happened to me when I got left the Enterprise and they had to be on DS9? I stopped watching the show for 2 decades. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and
I get why they're doing it, because, you know, normies, which I was once myself. I couldn't take
when Discovery Season 2 came out and Ensign Mount showed up as Pike, like, people lost their fucking minds. So, I mean, if I was CBS and I saw everybody screaming about how hot Ensign Mount was and how they want a show for him, I'd be like, yep, let's greenlight a show where he's the captain. Like, makes sense to me.
Looking at all the feedback for the new shows, the consistent only good thing that everybody says all the time and no one argues against is that Pike was awesome.
Oh, well, there you go.
He was.
So, even though, I don't want to see... I want a new Starfleet ship beyond Voyager, and then that's all I want. And that's why I'm watching the Orb.
Yeah, are they supposed to be on the USS Enterprise and NC-1701 in Strange New Worlds?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's going to upset me.
I think so.
All right.
Oh, I have a feeling that Enterprise set they made... That's a beautiful bridge, and there's no way they wouldn't use that again.
Yeah, they were probably already planning on doing Strange Worlds, frankly.
That bridge is gorgeous.
You know, I have a feeling that Strange New Worlds is the plots that they were planning for Discovery, but then people were like, get Discovery out of the timeline, so they were like, well, shoot it ahead, and then we'll give those plots to Pike instead.
It's possible. I do like pointing out that... maybe they didn't see my feedback, but I'm just saying they follow exactly my feedback. I would post on their official threads. I was like, hey, if you want to stop pissing everybody off, throw them into the far future. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to keep tripping over stuff that, like, messes up continuity. So, you know, pro tip, guys.
I got to say about the Discovery second season writing group, I guess, the writing team, is that they definitely paid attention to what bothered fandom about season one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did.
Maybe they did listen. Maybe too much, yep. But,
yeah, that's another problem with season two for me, which is, like, every episode I'm seeing way too much of, like, fan feedback. Mm.
That's how I felt about Mandalorian, though. Like, I feel like...
What?
I know. The Mandalorian? I knew this was going to upset somebody.
But Mandalorian was fan feedback? How
The thing that we were talking about before, weeks and weeks and weeks ago, about, like, how we respond to... like meta commentary differently and like fan references differently. Well, first of all, for me, the part that I care the most about TV shows is acting most of the time. And you don't get to see a whole lot when the main character has a helmet on and the second main character is a puppet.
True.
So it was difficult for me to connect emotionally to the characters to begin with. So I wasn't like all that enraptured in their stuff, especially since Baby Yoda was clearly designed to like, hit that, oh, cute little animal, like, center of our brains so that we would buy a bunch of them. So
the having a helmet on really touches back on what Kid Keith liked playing with his toys. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, my main character will always have his helmet on so that he could be me.
Mm.
So
yeah, which is great for play, and I understand why people would like The Mandalorian for that reason, because they can put themselves in his shoes. But for me, who cares about the like emotional aspect of things more than like maybe the plot or something. It was frustrating to watch. But the particular, and also because to me a lot of the episodes just felt like they were spaghetti western tropes and they didn't try that hard. But it's fine if you disagree. It was very enjoyable musically and visually, and some of the actors did fantastic jobs. I just personally didn't like it that much. But the reason I brought up The Mandalorian in the first place was because of that scene with the stormtroopers. There's a scene where they like toss a box down and one of them starts shooting at it and it's like 10, like 5 feet from him, but he misses it. And then the other one starts shooting it and they're both missing it. And I'm sure that scene was really funny for most people. But for me, I was just like, this doesn't make sense in-universe. It only makes sense with the meta commentary of stormtroopers are bad in the original movies because we needed the heroes to survive. Mm-hmm. So I understand why people like it. Cute. I don't like it. That's all.
I thought it was cute that they did it. But yeah, that was a bit much. A little on the nose.
There's that phrase again.
On the nose. There it is. So wrapping it back real quick, you guys and gal.
Guys, it's fine for me.
Thumbs up, thumbs down on Search for Spock. I mean, like, like let's wrap back to
I have a bunch more notes for Search for Spock. And,
yes.
Yeah.
Keep so, the notes.
Do you have more, or do we
while we're on the topic, we can say like my thumb is between middle and up.
Yeah. Okay. Totally up for me. Thumbs up. Yeah.
I really love the ensemble-ness of this one. The fact that everybody gets their own scene. Mm-hmm. Except maybe Chekhov.
Poor Chekhov.
He's like...
He gets some good stuff in the next one.
They give him moments in the next movie with his nuclear vessels.
Yes, vessels. There's the scene with... The scene where Kirk tells him to take the science station because they don't have a Spock, obviously. And he's just like, oh, sad.
But no, it was a wonderful movie. I loved it. And I loved that Leonard Nimoy directed it. And it did feel different. This is the one that felt like this. It's almost like this is the movie that kind of sucked me into the movies. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the first ones were good. Wrath of Khan obviously is epic and all that stuff. But this one, because, you know, I'm the heartstrings guy. Like I'm the emotional guy. Mm-hmm. So this one pulled me in, you know, especially when Kirk's son, the whole like father son thing, you know, it sucked me in. So this one is kind of, I think I could say this movie is the one that really got me into the Star Trek movies.
I'm really into the relationships between, especially like Kirk and Spock and Kirk and McCoy. Just like, you're taking me to the promised lands. Well, what are friends for? just like, Bones with Spock's Katra inside his head complaining about Spock to Kirk, who's like, all right.
It's taking my personal bias of like the format that is what I want in my Star Treks, and that was my problem. So
the high stuff,
where like if you don't end my Star Trek with a starship shootout, then like okay, whatever, you're missing part of the section of what I like in Star Trek. If I don't see the Enterprise shoot off at warp speed at the end, we're also missing something. You killed the Enterprise, and now we have a piece of shit warbird. Warbird, designed by Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's like this interview you watch with him. He goes, it should be a hulking thing. And like you see him put his arms up like the Bird of Prey is. And he goes, and then someone says like, maybe, like, you know, they should go up and down for the attack position, and you see him move his arms up and down. So
that's cool.
That was Leonard Nimoy.
Nice.
And yeah, I thought that thing had appeared before that movie, but no.
The Klingon Warbird? Dang.
That's awesome, actually.
No, I guess not, because it's not in TOS.
Oh. Yeah. Nice. I would have thought it'd be. I definitely would have thought it was in TOS.
No, the Klingon.
It seems
Actually, I don't even recall if we see that many Klingon ships in TOS, but definitely no warbirds.
Yeah.
Not like the green ones from TNG.
Yeah, the warbird is Leonard Nimoy original. That's awesome.
Dang.
Oh, I like it even more.
Did he also come up with the pattern of a bird being painted on the bottom? That's an STO thing, I think.
Well, wasn't that the Romulan warbird that had the bird on it?
Right? Oh, wait. It's a bird of prey, not a warbird.
Bird of prey. What's your favorite? More notes? What's your favorite, like, non-Kirk scene? Because I think mine is Uhura's. All right, Mr. Adventure, get in the closet. Is this enough for you? You feeling your heartbeat running? I'm like, fucking love it.
She was awesome. She was just chewing that scene up. That was a lot of fun. Mine was Sulu, because I like the underdog taking on the bigger guy.
Don't call me tiny. And that, like, kind of not quite judo throw that he does, which just, like, flips him. You know that the actor, the actor who played the tall guy is just, like, a stunt dude. Because he gets one line, and then he does that beautiful flip.
Yep. He does a good job being a jobber for Sulu.
Indeed.
He made Sulu look great.
Do you have any?
Yeah, once again, I love like the power disparity. To me, was just like, yeah, this is how it should be.
Truly, that dude thinks he's gonna beat the shit out of Sulu. Sulu does not even try. He still has this fabulous cape.
Doesn't break a sweat.
Sulu's putting a bare minimum effort into it. He's like, no. I have fought monsters you have never can even imagine, son.
I do want to.
You look at it and kill you.
Truly, I do want to talk about costumes for a sec, because Sulu's, especially, I see what you mean by them having Star Wars outfits, because that one is very reminiscent of Lando Calrissian. But also, if he's already wearing that thing earlier on in the scene where they're like all in Kirk's apartment, and everybody's wearing kind of like fancy clothing that's more traditional to like where they come from, so. Like Sulu, he has that Lando Calrissian cape, but also like the neck is very much a kimono neck. Then like Uhura's outfit is very brightly colored and like block colored, so that's like African style. And then cool. Chekhov's outfit is not Russian at all. But yeah, I see where you're coming from with the Sulu costume being Star Warsy, but I also like that it reflected like his Japanese heritage without it being like traditional clothing. It had the same shapes as traditional clothing, but it looked modern.
I think that those will look great in a Star Wars Smugglers movie, and that's where it belongs. Put your freaking uniform on. I didn't show up here to see you guys wearing your Sunday evening clothes.
I mean, true. Every time we have a movie about them not actually being Starfleet, or like while Picard was running, you had the same complaint. You're like, I don't want to see Picard being a renegade. I want to see Picard being part of Starfleet. So, yep. Fair enough.
Like, Star Wars is for one thing, Star Trek is for another, and, like, there's too often Star Trek trying to Star Wars. And stop it. Wag my finger.
It's the difficulty of trying to make something really cerebral and be more action-y, and then it just kind of starts leaning into the action-adventure type. And Star Wars is definitely an action-adventure.
So. Yeah, they need to, once again, they need to hire Christopher Nolan to do the revamp all of Star Trek, and then I'll be happy.
That'd be cool.
Nolan, he's gonna make it dark though.
Interstellar wasn't that dark. Is high-minded.
That's fair.
And yeah, sciencey and hard sciencey.
I see why you would see Interstellar and be like, do Star Trek. Yeah, I see where you're coming from.
I was like, okay, we should be. Why wasn't this an Enterprise adventure that I just watched?
I personally didn't like the end of that movie though.
Say what?
I personally didn't like the end of that movie.
Would it be a spoiler to discuss that?
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah. I'm curious.
Or we can just do an episode about that.
Yes.
Okay, let's see. A note that I have. This one I don't want to talk about because we've already covered it, but it just says, Daddy's here, David. Oh, never mind. He's dead. Like Kirk finally gets there. He's like, let me talk to them. They're like, okay, here they are. He's like, I came for you, David. Oh, thanks, Dad. And then David's dead in the next scene.
It's like, nice save, Dad.
Damn it.
But I love the transporter swap. They're just like, oh, you're coming aboard the ship? Okay. But I make fun of the codes every time. I even wrote them down for all this time. So the first code is 1-1A. The second code is 1-1A-2B. The third code is 1B, 2B, 3. And the final code is 0, 0, 0, destruct, 0.
I always think they're so simple because, like, no one would guess that'd be simple.
I love it, though. It reminds me of that Spaceball scene where they're like, what is the combination? 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 2. That's the combination of my luggage. Like, you couldn't just, like, make a random collection of numbers and letters. Come on.
I feel like they
did try to mimic the I love Go Sulu in Wrath of Khan as they shoot away from the explosion. And then in this one they kind of made fun of it where Sulu says like engines are online, and then like Kirk kind of jokingly goes, Go Sulu.
Yep.
And then they fly away in their shitty bird of prey.
It's fucking hilarious.
From the explosion. That wasn't as good as the explosion from Khan is my note. Like, I see you're trying to do it again, but it's not as cool.
part that I like in that scene is Scotty sitting at the Bird of Prey looking at the control panel, and he's like, well, it's this button or nothing. Probably. I don't know. I think this is the start. Do you think I can read Klingon? Nah.
Oh, really quickly, slightly off topic. I had one of those things just happened to me recently, right now, where you say something and then Facebook just happens to show it in front of your face.
Oh, how fascinating. Where, like,
yeah, Amanda Tapping has showed up in my feed just now, and like I think she's live, so it might actually be a coincidence, but it's just a little odd.
That is odd. That book I was talking to you about earlier, Sapiens, I've been talking about it on my stream a lot recently, and somebody who's trying to find it put up the full title with the author in the chat to ask me if that was the one I was reading, and I said yes, that was the one. And one of my other friends who also is on the Twitch, he was in the chat for that, and as you know, Twitch is owned by Amazon, so his Amazon Prime has been advertising the book to him nonstop since.
Wow.
To the point where he's like, I wanted to read it, but now I feel like I don't, just because I see it everywhere. Which I understand, but yeah.
A little too scary. Try to trick me, Amazon. Just, you know, fool me.
Do it.
You're going to do it, fool me.
Do you have any notes left, Keith?
Let me see here. Hate Phil David, blew up Stuff and Junk. One More Time. Every time I see this scene, I'm like, all of the plans you could think of, you couldn't keep the ship. There's nothing else you could thought of but blowing up the Enterprise. All right.
But this is the first time they blow up the Enterprise, I think. As opposed to now where they blow it up every fucking movie.
The first of many.
And like, you know, it's like my third time out with this Enterprise. So, I think, yeah, that's the end of my notes, except for the space dock stuff. I love how much it looks like Star Trek Online. How much you can tell Star Trek Online took these scenes or like
this. Oh, that game's definitely designed by a bunch of massive nerds.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love it. Oh, yeah.
My buddy Mike does the, he's the community manager for it.
Nice. Good work, Mike.
So if you ever see a guy looks like a...
No, that's Matt. Never mind. Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't appear on my Facebook feed too much.
Those are your only friends I know, Keith. Huh? Those are the only friends of yours I know. Yeah. The ones that appear on your Facebook feed.
But yeah, if you watch Star Trek Online, like community events, there's like this one guy who has very long hair and he looks like he's a dwarf from D&D. So that with a jolly smile, that'll be Mike. Anyway.
Nice.
All right. I do actually have a couple of notes left. The transporter swap is fun. But really funny because like... they disappear down onto the planet while the other ones appear. Like, so it's not actually a swap. Like, they're not trading. They're like, theirs activates to send them somewhere while the other one activates them to send them to the same place, but somehow it doesn't mess up. Did that make sense?
I do wonder how they did, how that worked.
Yeah. But it's hilarious with really the Klingons cool wandering around. They're like, huh, nothing's talking except the computer. The what now?
Yeah,
right. 5, 4. Like, you can put that together, guys. Sorry about your crew, but as they say on Earth, c'est la vie.
Yeah.
Which is fucking cold.
Just short cold, of the game one-liner.
Cold, Kirk. That's cold. But, I mean, like, Lloyd's death is also just not heroic whatsoever.
Oh, I have had enough of you!
Oh, on the subject of Klingon honor, they really fuck with that last dude. I don't deserve to live. Fine, I'll kill you later. And then he's like, wait. You said you would kill me. And he's like, I lied.
I love that part.
Yeah. That's a note. That is a note that I have. I'll kill you later. And he doesn't do it. I was very disappointed in that.
I don't know. I think it makes sense. Kirk's not the type of person to just kill indiscriminately. He doesn't care about the Klingon feeling honor when he dies. He's like, I'm not going to kill you, dude. Yeah. You're not a...
Well, whatever. We are now in a space of mind where he could do it and it'd be totally okay. Like, this guy, but they killed your son. You can go hog wild now. Like, you don't have to show any mercy.
I disagree. I think that's one of the things that makes Starfleet stand out is that
you are right about that. I'm just saying in this instance where I'm feeling lots of rage that they killed his son and, like, you're talking like a badass. Like, let's go all in. We'll apologize for it later and not do it again. But here, we're talking shit at a Klingon who is part of killing your son, so we can murder him. It's okay. Mm. No one will.
That's true.
This.
But you need to keep one Klingon alive as a prisoner to interrogate.
Mm. Yeah, if you want to be all Starfleet honorable, I know. I'm just saying that he's talking some mad shit, and like I was like, yeah, he deserves it. Let's aw, fine, we're the good guys.
My last note is it's fucking funny. So Spock finally remembers who he is at the very end, and then he goes, "The ship, out of danger." Spock is like to save the ship, and then I blew it up. Okay, the crew is fine. I got all the crew off. None of the crew died. I still blew up the ship, though. Sorry, Spock.
Spock's like, God damn it.
What? Jim?
I'm gone for 10 days. No, just
kidding. We've had this ship for 20 years, Kirk. We've always figured something out.
Really like the final scene that takes place on Vulcan. Nimoy famously came up with the live long and prosper hand signal from, like, peeking between his eyes. At like what the fuck is the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
It was hand. In not church, mosque, is it? No, mosque is Islam. Jewish?
Temple.
He was peering between his fingers at temple, and he saw this esoteric symbol that the priest was making that he wasn't supposed to see, and he's like, oh, what? And that's what he copied.
Ooh,
based on that, I really appreciate that the last scene in Search for Spock, where they're all on Vulcan and it's like this traditional Vulcan esoteric ceremony, I suppose. And then all of the ladies in the back, the handmaidens, I guess, are doing this like raised hand symbol. And it's a different symbol, but considering that Nimoy's the one who came up with the hand thing in the first place, I appreciate that he was the one who built the Vulcan culture there. I'm sure he directed them to do that, et cetera. So we have a lot of the Vulcans, like, small bits to thank Nimoy for specifically. Mm-hmm. Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a great job.
Yeah, it should be. It came from the right person. And I guess I'm guessing that kind of makes... I'm glad that he does actually care at all. Yeah. Like...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a nerdy thing to come up with. And thank you for caring enough, Spock, to actually, you know, make that happen. I'm sure he has a life that he doesn't have to worry about, you know, hand signals and alien religions. But he took his time because he likes us.
I miss Nimoy.
But yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Good movie.
So, yeah. Like, all of us were like, I didn't remember liking it that much, but I like it, actually.
Yeah, it was a solid flick. Mm-hmm. I liked it.
Soundtrack is great, I thought.
I definitely say it's the best of the even.
Yes, absolutely. Films. Yep.
Of the odd films, excuse me. The odd films.
Yeah.
We
know what you... Yeah, I know. You like the TOS, or the...
The motion picture is fantastic.
Yeah. Right.
Transcendent. Uplifting. Mm-hmm.
What
Star Trek should be.
Well, you already know how I feel about the motion picture, obviously. But I would rank this one above the motion picture, too, because I just feel like the relationships are better.
Yeah, I agree.
And there are more of them. Motion picture is another one of those movies that kind of does the original TOS feeling, where it's more mostly like Kirk and Spock and Bones and not so much Uhura and Sulu and Chekhov and stuff. And Scotty. Scotty's always a treasure. He's such a smartass.
Always warms the heart.
Scotty is what people... What is the name of that trope? Genre savvy. Scotty is the most genre savvy of all of them.
Yeah.
Like, whenever people try to trick him... Keith, I really want you to watch TOS for, like, a bunch of Scotty moments among things. There's an episode where Kirk is down planet side and somebody calls back up trying to get to the Enterprise faking Kirk's voice. And it does not get past Scotty. He's just like, okay, Captain. Cool. And then he immediately asks him like a tester question and the answer is wrong. He's like, all right, Captain, no problem. Hangs up and he's like, well, that's not Captain Kirk. Ah, beautiful.
Cool.
I love Scotty. Scotty's a real treasure.
Yeah, I've never really seen him be anything other than what seems like a very beloved retired uncle,
right? Mm-hmm.
He kind of comes across as a beloved retired uncle, even in TOS, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm giving it all she's got. Anyway, that's all from me.
Yeah.
Anything from you? Final thoughts?
No, it was a good flick. I'm excited about Star Trek IV, though. That's one of my favorites.
Oh, good. Well, that's the next one.
Yep.
That'll be a fun one to roll through.
Do you have any last thoughts about this film? Favorite bits?
Or Bob's?
Actually, oh yeah, when we were talking about favorite scene that wasn't Kirk, I thought it was funny when he was like, you saw it? Okay. And then he shot, like he killed his
girlfriend. Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd. Yeah. Like I just, that scene, it just kind of solidified like, oh yeah, they're Klingons. That's right.
I keep on thinking she had a moment to lie. Like you didn't have to say it. You didn't have,
but she's honorable. Been, so she did. Quiet. She was honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well, exactly. That's honor. It's honorable, but it's just they played true, Klingons true. Yeah. Like to the T, and it was great. So I actually was just like, oh, okay, I appreciate that scene for what it is.
It really tells you a lot about his character, about his goals, about it's great.
And that they're bad guys and they deserve that.
Yeah. But I think we've all agreed it's one of the better one of the best Star Trek movies.
I'm looking
it's
forward really to good.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I can't wait for Undiscovered Country. Oh yeah. Oh, and also
whatever, Keith. Whatever.
The Final Frontier. The Final Frontier. I can't wait for that because, like,
I don't think I even remember the plot of a Final Frontier.
Huh?
I don't think I even remember the plot of a Final Frontier.
That's probably good.
Everyone hates that one. Everyone hates it, but I love it.
Okay. Well, we're gonna watch it soon.
We'll see. We'll see.
Why does God need us? All
right. Well,
yes. No, what does God need with Star Trek?
I think that's all for us.
Anyway.
So thank you as always for joining us. You can find us at thereare4hosts.popkeys.com, thereare4hosts.com, at 4hosts on Twitter. You know, find us.
On the Tumblr. No, I'm just kidding.
On the Tumblr?
We're not on there.
No, that's just average
there
Jay.
You go.
I'm
Jay's
on
Tumblr,
that's
so
it.
Jay, why don't you run a Tumblr for us, hey?
Jay's like,
yeah, it's a lot of work. I agree.
You know, it's funny, in all honesty, I don't even run my Tumblr. I just have Instagram. Instagram automatically posts to it for me, so.
I don't know which end of Tumblr to hold.
That's fair enough.
That's how much I run for Tumblr. Which end is up?
On that note,
all right,
Keith.
Right,
too funny.
That's all
right,
for me.
Everyone.
See you in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And thanks,
remember,
everyone.
Everyone, keep going to war at the end of episodes and movies.
Wait a minute. That feels wrong.
This feels all wrong. What happened?
Focus,
what happened?
Keith.
Gotcha. Keep looking up, everybody. Keep it looking up.
Right.
Engage.
Okay, make it so.
All right.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Later, guys.